Hello and welcome to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name's Ed Scott, and in this episode I'm bringing you the second part of a double bill, both episodes published today featuring winners of the Spine races. This is a chat with Harry Firth, the men's winner of the Spine Challenger North. I also spoke to Sarah Page, the women's winner of the Spine Challenger South. Make sure you listen to that before or after you listen to this one. There's no order in which to do them. Harry is a runner based in the far north of England who has had some success in the past few years on difficult mountainous ultras. He's come second twice at 13 Valleys and he has won the GB Ultras Snowdon 100. He ran almost every step of the Spine Challenger North with his friend and running companion Mike Jewaczynski. But as you'll hear in this podcast, I don't want to give anything away, but they did end up separating and Harry ended up taking the win by almost exactly 2 minutes. This is in a race, by the way, that went on for over 46 hours. Highly recommend you check out Harry's vlog of the race. Yes, that's right. The winner of the race has produced a YouTube vlog of his experience. Not only is it really entertaining and Harry is a super endearing host, but it really gives you a sense of the conditions that people face out on the spine. It's not an overly produced video. There aren't any drone shots or super wide angle shots. It's all filmed on Harry's 360 camera. So you really feel like you're there in the race with him. And my goodness me, does it put it into perspective what he achieved at that race. Quick reminder that the podcast will be broadcasting from the Arc of Attrition. Check the website runfeetfirst.co.uk/live for the schedule. We're going to be broadcasting some live streams on Thursday and Friday, Wi-Fi permitting, so make sure you tune in for those. All the conversations will also be published afterwards as podcasts, but if you want to hear those conversations pre-race, then you can tune in from work and just have some headphones in, no one will know. And just a quick thank you to Janji for supporting the podcast. Janji make incredible trail running apparel that is designed to support that spirit of adventure in running, help you explore the world around you on 2 feet. I've been really enjoying the new Rain Runner jacket. This is a lightweight, waterproof jacket that has these unique ventilation holes. It really helps prevent the buildup of sweat and heat whilst you're wearing a rain jacket, but keeps your skin nice and dry, which is what you want in this particularly wet and humid January. If you head to janji.com, there will be a link in the show notes. You can use the code FEETFIRST if anything takes your fancy. That will get you 15% off your next running apparel purchase, and it will really help the podcast and help keep that spirit of adventure alive in trail running. That's janji.com. Use the code FEETFIRST. All right, here is Harry Firth. Harry Firth, welcome to Feet First.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your win of the Spine Challenger North, 46 hours and 29 seconds. Have you had time to soak up the achievement yet of crossing the line first?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I think it took a little while to sink in. I was kind of in disbelief for the majority of the race, to be honest. We kept thinking we were going to get caught. But yeah, the first sort of day or two afterwards was definitely, I was on cloud nine. I was absolutely over the moon, couldn't believe it. So yeah, it's all starting to sink in now. I've had so many people messaging me saying well done and whatnot, and it's been lovely. So everything's starting to sink in and realise what I've actually achieved, so, which is nice. Yeah.
I know you've spent a lot of time on rough ground and running some pretty tricky races and tricky runs. For people who aren't familiar with you and your kind of running and sports background, could you maybe tell us a bit about who you are and day to day, where can you be found running?
Yeah, sure. So my running background, I guess, I started running in May 2023. Before that, you know, I've always sort of enjoyed being in the outdoors, predominantly on my mountain bike. Mostly around the Lake District, around Scotland. Back in 2017 was probably where my big love for the outdoors started. When I finished university, I went and hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, south from the Canadian border down to the Mexican border. You know, that was, I think it was just under 4 months, so I was on trail, and that was obviously absolutely amazing experience. And after that, kind of dove straight back into mountain biking. And then I had a friend, Suf, who appears in quite a lot of my vlogs and Instagram posts, and he started running about the same time as me. Basically, he was up in Glasgow and he was moving back to Newcastle. And I went up to help give him a hand moving his stuff down. And he was saying, oh yeah, before I start work again in Newcastle, I would love to do like a long trail. I was thinking the West Highland Way or the Rob Roy Way. And I was like, oh dude, that sounds great fun. So I basically jumped on board with that. We both went and hiked the Rob Roy Way. Really enjoyed it. And that was, like I said, in that was April 2023. And then after that, we said, oh, we're both turning 30 this year. Let's sign up to an ultra marathon. So we initially signed up to the Helvellyn Sky Ultra in the Lake District. That ended up getting short coursed because of bad weather. So it was only 26 miles. So it wasn't technically even a full marathon. So afterwards, we were both like, oh, well, that was great, but let's try and do an ultra. So we signed up to the 13 Valleys, which was, I think, 12 weeks later, which is 114 miles. And pretty much that just got us absolutely addicted. And just ever since then, we've been out running and trying to do races wherever we can. But most of the time I spend most of my weekends in the Lake District. I actually live, for those who know the Pennine Way, I live about 2 miles from Walltown, which is the halfway point between Alston and Bellingham. So I actually have a nice 10K loop, which goes from my back door up onto the Pennine Way and then back along Hadrian's Wall Path. So I spend a lot of time sort of around the Hadrian's Wall Path, Pennine Way around here, but also 45 minutes to an hour from the Lake District. So I can get over there in not much time at all, get up any of the sort of northern fells pretty quickly. And I just love spending time in the hills, really. It's just the adventure, just being out there and having a good time with mates, really.
It's fascinating to me that you've only been running for a couple of years, because you've won or you've podiumed at some pretty big independent races. You mentioned 13 Valleys there, the Snowdon Ultra as well, obviously now the Spine Challenger North.
Yeah.
Where do you think that's coming from? I mean, you obviously have a lot of experience on the trail, and the races that you've done well at, they perhaps don't prioritize raw speed, although I'm sure you have plenty of that, as much as technical ability, confidence on the hill, and obviously like extreme endurance, right? Is that those play more of a role, I guess, in the races that you prioritize?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's obviously always some degree, you have to obviously have some level of speed, but I totally understand and agree with what you're saying. You know, I don't think I'm the fastest person out there, but I do very much enjoy the technical terrain, especially, you know, in the Lake District, which is, I guess, my bread and butter, because I spend most of my time there, more because of the scenery. And I think it's always a good time out there. But obviously, you can pretty much go anywhere out there and you're always going to have challenging terrain. You're always going to have, you know, steep descents or steep climbs. And I don't know, I guess I kind of just really enjoy the getting your head down and really trying to see like how fast you can get up. You know, if you go Blencathra, for example, you can do Blencathra in about 5 miles and get 2,500 feet of elevation, which is 800 meters, maybe. Right. Sorry, yeah. I work in feet and miles still. I'm old school.
Good. I can translate in my head.
So yeah, I think I just enjoy the technical aspect, and then the races I've done have probably lent into that. And I was chatting to Mike and Andy, who were second and third at the Spine, and a lot of people don't know, but the three of us have been friends for quite a while. And they came round here for dinner 2 nights ago, and they were asking the same thing. They were saying, you know, what do you think it is that makes you quite good at that sort of race? And Mike did point out, he said, you know, on the descents you seem very stable. He said, you know, he never really saw me trip or roll an ankle or slip, which isn't something I've given much thought to, but I suppose thinking back to it, I don't think I've, in the 2.5 years I've been running, you know, touch wood, I've not had a bad ankle roll in that whole time or anything like that. So I don't know whether that's maybe comes a bit from the mountain biking side, where you know, looking at line choice. Or, yeah, I don't know, really.
Yeah, natural descender. They do say, like, races are a lot of big trail races, they are won on the descent, right? Because to a certain point, as long as you're fit, you can climb, you know, just depending on your fitness. But it's kind of a mental thing to sort of find the best line, as you say, and descend well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably a good point. Mm. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy a good climb as well. I think I actually quite enjoy climbing. which I think helps as well. Just sort of getting your head down and just gritting it out. Because when it comes to sort of running, if you get a race where you've got a long, long flat section, so I did the Mavericks Peaks 100K.
Yeah.
Really good race. Very much enjoyed it. Found myself in second place about halfway in, and I wasn't really thinking anything of it until Mike actually messaged me saying, you're chasing the guy down, you're reeling him in. And I've never had to try so hard for, you know, 50K. It was there was so much flat running in it, and which is, you know, great for somebody who loves flat running, but that's not me. There was times on that course and I was dying for a hill to appear just so I could have a good power hike up it and rest.
It really brings into perspective, you know, the kind of races you're used to, because that race, the 100K, it has over 2,500 meters of climbing, whereas the races you're used to, they really do step up in terms of elevation beyond that.
Yeah, it tend to be a lot more.
Yeah. Well, you ran the full spine last year? Was it the year before or last year?
Yes.
Last year, yeah. You came ninth, which is obviously a fantastic performance. What drew you to come back to the race this year, and why the Challenger North as opposed to the full spine again?
So, to be completely honest, when I did the full spine, it was meant to be a once in a lifetime race. I was going to do it, and that was going to be it. Obviously, I had a great race, did a little bit better than I expected to, which is fantastic. I think my aim last year was to hopefully get under 120 hours, and I came in 98.55, I think it was. So I was absolutely over the moon with that. And afterwards, I was sort of thinking, I was like, looking back and reflecting, you know, I had a lot of time faffing. I had a lot of time when I wasn't running, I could have been. And I was thinking, do I do this again? Do I have another go at it? Do I try, you know, go for a faster time? And I sort of resigned myself to thinking, yes, but maybe not straight away. And then I sort of settled on potentially 2027. And Mike did the Paddy Buckley round back in August, and I went down to Payson for it. And him and Andy had already signed up to the Spine Challenger North based off me saying that it was such a good time, you should definitely have a go at it. And we basically sat in his kitchen the next morning and they were talking about it. I got really jealous, so I joined the waitlist. And when I joined the waitlist at the end of August, I was 117th. So I thought, well, never mind. I'll put my name down to volunteer, but if I don't get a place, I don't get a place. And then November rolled around and I just thought, out of the blue, I'd check. And I was up to 30th. And I thought, oh, I might actually get a place here. And then checked a week later and I was 15th. And then I think it was potentially either the last weekend of November or the first week of December, I got an email saying there was a place available. So I took it out of pure jealousy of Mike and Andy doing it, basically, and thought, let's give it a go, why not?
That's awesome. To get into the race that last minute, it gives hope, I guess, because the race does tend to sell out very quickly, but I guess you can get in if you just stick your name on that list.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, I think you're more likely, by the sounds of it, to get onto the Challenger races on the wait list than the full spine, because I know Andy and Mike both entered the Challenger, but they also put their name onto the full spine wait list, and they were both in the 20s and didn't get a spot.
Right.
Whereas obviously I moved quite far. But yeah, I think when I obviously got the place, I was like, great, that's fantastic, let's go for it. And I hadn't really given much thought to how different the race would be, with it being a shorter race, a slightly faster race. I just thought I'll go out and have a good time with my friends, and whatever happens, happens. Sort of cobble together a loose plan of what would be a good thing to aim for, and then sort of took it from there, really.
A quick break to thank Petzl for supporting Feet First. Petzl have been at the forefront of hands-free lighting for over 50 years. They have led the way, quite literally lit the way, for many incredible trail running performances here in the UK and overseas. Their unique reactive lighting technology instantly provides the right lighting at the right time, sensing, adapting, and responding to your surroundings. If you are in the market for a new headlamp, I highly recommend you check out the new Petzl Swift LT. This is an ultra compact, lightweight, rechargeable headlamp. It provides 380 lumens in just 43 grams. You literally do not notice that you're wearing it or carrying it. It's the perfect backup head torch during a race, and it's also a great primary head torch if you're just running on your local trails or around your local parks. It comes with three separate lighting levels as well as a red light for safety. So that's the Petzl Swift LT, which you can pick up now from the Centurion Ultra Running Store. And whilst you're there, use the code FEETFIRST10 for 10% off your purchase. Help support the podcast and help support an incredible lighting solution. That's Petzl Swift LT at the Centurion Ultra Running Store. All right, back to Harry Firth. You mentioned your time last year sneaking in under 100 hours. Obviously, the men's winner this year, Sebastian Reichon, finishing just under 96 hours, I think. How do those... It's very hard to compare times on the spine, I know, but when you think about the conditions last year and the time you ran versus the conditions you saw out on the hills this year, I mean, any reflections on Sebastian's performance and where you think you may have stacked up if you'd taken part this year in the full spine?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult to say. I do think this year I'm certainly in a much better position in terms of my fitness and my preparedness, what to expect of the spine as well. From what I saw and what I heard, the first 100 miles was much more challenging this year than last year. But from my experience of the second 160 miles, they were a lot easier. I felt the course was a bit faster. A lot of the bogs were frozen. There was a bit of ice, the ice was absolutely horrendous, to be honest, up to about Tan Hill. And then after that, it kind of eased a little bit. But it was also, you could also go around it. There were certainly parts between Keld and Tan Hill where, you know, there was only that narrow path to run on, and it was like glass going over it. And, you know, I was running with a group of five or six, and we were all falling over. We had people with Yak Tracks, people with the Cthulhu micro spikes, with the big stabby daggery spikes, the really aggressive ones, and everyone was falling over at some point. So it was really just hard work. But then once we got into the race, you know, certainly once we got halfway to Langenbeck, the A66 crossing, it seemed to get a lot easier underfoot. And I think from then onwards, the conditions were more favourable in the second half. So it's hard to say how I would have fared if I was on the full spine. I think if the conditions were comparable, I think I probably would have gone potentially faster than last year, just based off how I'm feeling fitness-wise and how I'm feeling in terms of preparedness. Like this time I was much more organised in the checkpoints. I didn't faff as much. I had everything in my bag was dialed in, whereas last time I was faffing no end, which I think was a bit of being my first time on the spine. You don't really know what to take. You take far too much. You know, this time I think my drop bag was 14 kilograms. Last time it was 21 kilograms and I had to take some stuff out of it. So,
Yeah, that experience coming to bear. I saw in the build-up to the spine, you ran a unsupported winter Bob Graham just before Christmas.
Yes.
First of all, I mean, massive kudos just for doing that. But where did that sit in the context of your training? And I guess generally with that short window that you had to train for the race, what did training look like?
So training was a little bit different how I would have liked it. So I am at the ripe old age of 32. I've actually gone back to university. I'm in my second year of a master's degree studying physiotherapy. And I was actually down on a hospital placement in Lancaster. So my training for the sort of 6 weeks running up to it, I basically had 3.5 weeks in Lancaster and then 2.5 weeks-ish at home. In Lancaster, mega flat, lots of canal paths. So I was just trying to get a lot of cumulative miles in, really. And I was doing a lot of strength work in the gym. And then once I got home, it was very much trying to get out in the lakes and just get some elevation in the leg, get some of more of that elevation volume. And then the Bob was kind of, it kind of came about a bit out of the blue. So Luke, the gentleman I did it with, we had said, I think it was maybe a month or two ago, said, oh, I'm free this week. Do you want to do something in the lakes? And he said, yeah, I'm free every day other than Thursday. And as it got closer, we were like, oh, the weather's looking good. What do you fancy? And then we jokingly said, oh, how about a winter Bob? And then we both just kind of went, yeah, all right then. So it was very much, you know, I think on the Monday, we sort of decided to go for it. On the Tuesday morning, we met at Moot Hall at 6 a.m. and set off. And it was really nice, actually. You know, we got around in just under 23 hours, and it was very much we sort of said, if it takes us 28 hours, it takes us 28 hours. If we get to one of the road crossings and we don't fancy it, we'll just get someone to give us a lift back. Mm. You know, we both had a few people who had offered if we needed help. So we had no pressure, no stress to do it. So it was very spur of the moment. And in terms of the training, I actually think it worked quite well because with being unsupported, I took everything with me that I needed for the full round. I had all of my spine kit on. The only thing I didn't take was a sleeping bag and bivy bag. So my bag was pretty much loaded up how it should be. I got to test out my shoe, sock and foot cream combo, which worked perfectly, got no blisters, which really put my mind at ease going into the race. And, you know, I had no shoulder issues. The bag fit perfectly. I had everything in places where I could have it comfortably. So I think it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do in terms of a massive chunk of mileage, what was 3 weeks out from the race. But it gave me a massive confidence boost going into the race that I could do it. And then a few days later, I was still running, you know, 5-6K with the dogs and feeling okay.
That's awesome. I presume it wasn't your first time out on the Bob Graham round then to work your way around it in winter unsupported.
No, so I did my first Bob last August, and that again was quite spur of the moment. I think I planned that on the Monday and went on the Friday.
Perfect.
It was chaotic, but it was good fun as well. This was actually a faster time, surprisingly,
way.
Which I was quite shocked and pleased with actually.
That's awesome.
So that kind of also put a bit of a positive, you know, spin on it for me.
That's really cool to hear actually, because the Bob is like so many things. It's one of those things that's kind of, you put a lot of weight on it. It's a hallowed thing to achieve. I know I think about maybe I'll try it when I'm 40 or something, and I think I have to have this big build up. Maybe I should just go and try it and see how far I get and then try it again and keep trying.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing is, it's not going anywhere. It's always going to be there. And I think people do put a lot of pressure on themselves to do it, or, you know, to make sure that everything goes perfectly for it. And the reality is, in the lakes, in the mountains, nothing ever goes perfectly, or rarely anyway, in my experience.
Yeah.
So sometimes to have a bit less pressure is quite nice. And at the end of the day, if you do it right, it ends up just being a good fun day out with some friends. And I think they're some of the best days out in the hills. Mm. In my experience anyway, that's what ends up being some of the best days out.
Well, let's talk about spending time with friends then, because I know that you spent a lot of miles at this race, Challenger North, with your friend and the second place finisher, Mike Jerochinski, I think is his surname.
Yes, I've got to be honest, I can't pronounce his surname very well either.
Well, I've done my best. How was it sharing the trail at the race? You know, you were there pretty much first checkpoint, you were together, last checkpoint, you were together.
Yeah, it was awesome. It really was. So obviously when we set off, we sort of said, let's stick together as long as we stick together, and, you know, no hard feelings, we'll separate when we separate, or whatever happens, happens. And then we got into Langdonbeck and we were still together, and I was like, oh, this is great. We said, you know, Langdonbeck would be a nice one to still be together at. And then obviously as we went further on, we still stayed together, and it was really nice because we kept breaking apart. You know, we left Dufton, and between Dufton and Greg's Hut, I think I put a few minutes into Mike, and he put a few minutes into Andy. But then I got to Greg's Hut, had my noodles, and I was going to leave, but I thought, as I was preparing to leave, Mike came in, so I thought, oh, I'll just wait for him. You know, it makes no odds to me. And then we sort of all ran down at Alston together. Leaving Alston together, going through that sort of the bogs of Blenkinsop Common, was nice to just have a bit of company and share the navigation. And I think actually having more people there just to sort of share with the nav, share with the pace setting, share with also the light, because you can have your head torch on a lower mode because you've got three lights rather than one. Mm. And then it was just as we're getting into Walltown that Andy dropped off a little bit, and he was having a few stomach issues, a bit of nausea. And when he got into Walltown, he just sort of said, listen, lads, the pace has been a bit too much, so I'm just going to slow it down and get my stomach sorted. Me and Mike set off again. And yeah, we sort of made plans together. You know, we sort of said, we'll get into Bellingham, we'll have 90 minutes sleep. But, you know, if you have 30 minutes and you wake up and you can't sleep, just wake the other one up. So we'd sort of agreed a bit of sportsmanship, not just to snake the other one in the night and get a good advantage. And yeah, it worked. And we basically sort of said, if we're still together towards the end, we'll either separate organically between Burness and the finish, or we'll race the last sort of 3K from the Tunnux truck. And that was our plan. And then over that last leg, sort of from hut one, on every climb, I sort of kept putting a little bit of time into Mike, and I would just wait for him at the summits or wait for him at the next gate. And then as we sort of got down to the valley, he's sort of said, he's like, listen, mate, I'm not going to race. He's like, I don't think I'll beat you. And realistically, you've dragged me along for the last X amount of miles. And he said, you could have dropped me on the climbs, but you kept waiting for me, which I appreciate. So he sort of said, you know, you just crack on. And we basically ran from the Tunnux truck. We started to push on because I sort of said, look, if we push a little bit along here, we might make it under 46 hours. So we ran together all the way until that very last climb that drops you up and over into Kirkyetlam. And as we turned onto that climb, I ran up the hill and Mike just started walking up it. And he just said, crack on, mate, and let me sort of stride out for the finish, which was amazing. I think it was all good sportsmanship from both of us. You know, we didn't want to sort of take advantage of each other. And we both had a great race. And he sort of said, you know, his time was aiming for around a midnight finish, or between 6 p.m. and midnight. And, you know, we got in daylight hours. So I think, yeah, he had a really strong race and he absolutely smashed what he was aiming for. So I think it was really nice sharing the trail with friends, you know, both Andy and Mike for the majority of it, but then Mike for the whole thing. It certainly made the race, it seemed to go a lot faster. You know, you could have a lot of conversation. And it wasn't just the sort of generic trail conversation that you often have on races, you know, where are you from, what do you do, what races have you done? You know, it was that sort of that mates banter where you just sort of take the mick out of each other a little bit and have a good laugh. And it was really fun. I very much enjoyed it. It was probably one of my favourite races, probably because of that, I think.
Well, you're one of the only people I know of to have won a major British Ultra whilst vlogging the whole experience. I haven't yet sat down to watch the whole thing. I definitely will. But I sort of took a cursory glance through the vlog, which you put together really quickly, actually. Highly recommend that people watch it because it really gives you a sense of just how like brutal the conditions can be, both at the extreme end, but also just, you know, slogging your way through really rough ground and, you know, quite sort of, yeah, just tough conditions. But in there, you share some of your experiences running with Mike, and it really does come across as though you're just two mates out on the hill together. So did competition, not so much between the two of you, but between, you know, with the two of you and the rest of the field, the fact that you found yourself in first and second, did it ever sort of enter your mind of like, oh, we're actually winning this thing and we should try and hold on to that? Or were you just enjoying yourself out there with your friend?
I'd say a bit of both. So when we first realized that we're actually at the front of the field coming off Schoenefell quite early on, well, we assumed we were because there was no other tracks in the snow in front of us, and we were still with a big group at that point. So we either thought, well, someone's got very lost in front of us, or we're at the front.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we were the big group, and then as we started to pull away, we didn't give much thought of it for quite a while, really. I think coming into Alston was the first time we actually thought, are we in the lead and how far in the lead are we? Like, that's when we properly gave it some thought, because we got into Greg's hut, and John was like, oh, this is the first batch of noodles I've done. And I was like, oh, I must be the first one here. Fantastic. But yeah, we didn't. It was really going into Alston, that last little section between Garrigill and Alston, we were like, oh, let's just have a quick check and see how far ahead we are. And I think we were maybe an hour and a half ahead-ish, I think. And we sort of thought, right, let's try and at least get in and out. And we originally planned a 30-minute power nap, which Andy, Mike and I all tried to go and do. But I think I maybe got 10 minutes of drifting in and out. Those two got nothing. But we sort of said, you know, we'll give ourselves an hour at the checkpoint to eat, sort our feet out, sort our kit out, and have a 30-minute power nap on top of that. So that's 90 minutes. I think we were in and out in about 90 minutes, but we said, let's try and get out before the next people get in, just to sort of give ourselves a little bit of comfort, which we managed to do. And then after that, we sort of, again, didn't really think about it until we were dropping into Bellingham, where Mike and I were saying we're going to have a 90-minute sleep. So let's say 90-minute sleep plus an hour-ish, an hour and a half maybe to sort our stuff. So let's say we need 3 hours here. Have we got enough lead that we're going to be not crossing paths? And as we were dropping in there, we sort of, that was the, again, the second time we checked. And then after that, we were like, oh, we've actually managed to build a decent gap here. So I think we were always conscious of it after that point, maybe. I think, you know, dropping into Burness, we were saying, right, how far behind is the next guy? How far behind is the chasing pack? Because obviously the thing with a race like that is it is long and so much can happen and you can come up quite far. And I know last year when I did it, I think by, you know, 100 and something miles in, 120 miles in, I was quite, I wasn't anywhere near the where I finished. And obviously I had quite a strong second half and came up through the field. And, you know, we knew there was the likes of Nicky Spinks and Elaine Bissom as well in that sort of chasing pack, as well as Fraser and Alice, who we were with earlier on. And there was Reese as well from the MRT race, and he was with us early on and he was running strong. So we kind of always knew there were some people behind us and we were thinking, you know, it's not going to take much for them to get a second wind and start reeling us in. So I think we were somewhat aware of it, but I think by the time we got to Burness and we thought, right, we've got 26 miles left and we had maybe 4 or 5 hours, you know, we still wanted to have a strong finish, but we were sort of quite comfortable that we felt comfortable that we weren't necessarily going to get caught if something, unless something went drastically wrong, which is, again, a completely alien feeling to both of us in a race, I think. So, yeah, it was certainly an interesting one to sort of process.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a really captivating story in a sense, because I obviously I don't want to do you any disservice as an athlete, but the way it comes across in the vlog is it is just two guys out for a run together, or three guys and then two guys. I'm curious about the vlogging, because I think all of us at some point or another have entertained the notion of documenting our runs, but when you're actually in an ultra, particularly, you know, when the going gets tough, it's quite hard to whip out a GoPro and talk to the camera or just document what's going on. So what's your relationship with vlogging? I mean, how, what's underpinning that motivation to document these races, do you think?
I think a couple of things in terms of, I mean, I've always liked the idea of getting behind a camera and filming stuff. Even when I was young, when I would go out on my bike and play in the street, I would always try and, you know, film over jumps and silly stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then as I got older and got into mountain biking more, it was always the GoPro on the helmet and filming yourself out doing adventures. And then it was, again, I think it was Suff when we were out on the Rob Roy Way. It was like, oh, we should have filmed some of this. It was probably quite cool to look back on. So I kind of just thought, you're not wrong. It would be.
Yeah.
So then I think on the first race we did, I just took a camera, basically just tried to film as much as I could. And it just continued on from there. And I think the production maybe has got slightly better, but I don't put a huge amount of effort into the editing. I'm not a videographer. I don't claim to be. I just try and have fun and make little fun videos. But the vlogs, I remember the first few I did, I felt so awkward, you know, talking to a camera. Whereas now it's almost second nature. I can quite happily pull out the camera and just hold it up and just chat to it. And some people don't mind it, some people do, but I will often just put it in someone's face and say, anything to add? And some people hate it. But most of the time people will just, you know, add how they're feeling, and I think it just makes a bit more of a story.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'll sometimes go back and watch races that I've done in the past. Without, I know that's probably sounds quite vain, but more just for remembering how it went. And yeah, I think it just gives you a bit of a memory to look back on, you know, at some point. And you know, I've got videos from like Suff and I going fast packing in the lakes that I watch every now and again, or, you know, mountain bike trips I've done or ski trips that I've done. And I think it's just, yeah, a different way to hold those memories, really.
Yeah.
I also like that you can see me progressively getting more and more haggard throughout the videos from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, long may it continue. I feel like there's two, I guess, media types that have not died a death, but are at risk of going extinct. And one is the vlog, the classic YouTube vlog, of which you're, you know, you're a producer. And the other is the blog, the written blog. And I think it's like, those two media forms are sort of victim to a pincer movement. You've got like short form, you know, the TikTok style social content that's kind of killing the brain cells of some people. But then you've also got the really heavily produced cinematic trail running films, which I absolutely love watching, of course.
Yeah.
But I think when I think back to when I got into the sport, it was these vlogs made by folks like yourself that really got me inspired. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to, definitely looking forward to watching the whole thing and just, you know, warts and all, just reliving the experience with you, I think.
Oh, cheers, mate. Yeah, well, I hope you find it enjoyable. I mean, they are very much, they're very raw and uncut.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, I had a lad saying, oh, do you not do fancy doing voiceovers for it and just sort of having beautiful bits of trail? And, you know, I've thought about it, but I just don't think it necessarily captures what I'm living in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what I enjoy most, you know, not sort of saying, oh, at this point in the race, I realized I'd forgotten my soft flask and I had to go back, or it's very much just my raw emotion and, you know, what I'm feeling at the time. And sometimes I feel like rubbish and I'm very open about that. And I'll say, oh, this is really horrible, this climb, or whatever it might be. There's not much of that, to be fair, on this one, because I actually enjoyed the vast majority of it,
Yeah.
which is really nice as well, I suppose. Maybe like 95% of it, I think I say, was saying I probably enjoyed, other than, you know, a handful of really nasty bits of trail.
Yeah, I mean that came across from the bits I have seen that, you know, you're navigating your way through basically just hell, some really, really difficult places. And you do seem very chipper and lucid. And at the end as well, you seem very alert, very, very lucid, despite having been on the move for 46 hours. Were you as chipper as you seem on the vlog when you crossed that finish line, or did you have to go and have a lie down afterwards?
I don't think I was quite at the point of having to have a lie down. We did consistently get people saying, "Oh, you look really good," and Mike and I were both thinking, "Well, I don't feel very good." But I don't know. I think I potentially do have quite a positive attitude sort of throughout the races. I think I'm just enjoy being there. You know, I've also paid for it, so I want to try and enjoy it as much as I can. Yeah, I think. With it obviously coming across the line at the front of the field with, you know, a considerable gap, won the race, completely all of that unexpected, I was elated at the
Yeah.
finish. I was so over the moon. Like, the first thing I did, obviously, touched the wall, said hello to my wife, said hello to my dogs, and then I got back and I ran to the finish line to cheer Mike over. And then I followed him down to the wall. He did the same. I think both of us were very close to tears. I don't think we either of us shed a tear, but we were very close. And it was just so nice to actually, you know, be quite alert, be quite awake and chat. And yeah, I think it didn't take me long once I was sat inside before things started to seize up and I thought, oh, I'm gonna need a shower and I'm gonna need a rest.
Yeah.
But for that sort of first 30 minutes, 45 minutes after the race, I was just on absolute cloud nine. I was buzzing.
So cool. So stoked for you. I'm curious to know, you know, what other races have piqued your interest. You feels like you really do sit at the adventure end of the ultra running spectrum. So I don't anticipate maybe we'll see you on a 100 mile track race anytime soon. But are there races out there that pique your interest? And also does having a win now in your CV, does that change the way you're thinking about your running, or is this just another step on the road?
I don't know whether having a win changes the way I think about it that much. Because I think it's important to remember that I only won because there was nobody there who was faster than me,
Well,
which
sure,
I'm
but
not trying to say that in a
that's
negative
always
way.
true, right? Like you could say that about
Yeah, of
anything.
course. Yeah, of course. But I don't want to, you know, let I don't want to let it go to my head or anything. You know, I want to make sure that
Sure.
I'm still doing races that I enjoy because I enjoy them and I want to do them, rather than, oh, I think I could win this race, so I'm going to do this race. I still want to do a race that appeals to me for the fundamentals of what the race is about. You know, whether it be the terrain or the location, or, you know, whether some friends are doing it. The Snowdon race, for example, I did that because I supported my friend Suf at a Snowdon Sky race, and the scenery was just phenomenal. So I thought, I want to do a race there. I had another friend who was looking to do that race, so we both did it together. So it was kind of like a bit of a mixture of both. So I don't think I'll necessarily pick races based off whether I think I can win them. Obviously, I think that's, for me, it's not why I race. I
Yeah.
race because I absolutely love running. In terms of other races, honestly, I think the problem is being quite new to, I still consider myself quite new to running. I consider myself a bit of a nobody in the running world. I don't know that many races.
Yeah.
So I only sort of do what, you know, I hear about online, or I see somebody's done a race and then I think that looks like a great race to have a go at. I know you interviewed Caspian
Yeah.
a few, was it 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, just before the winter downs. I was going to ask if you're interested in the race across Scotland, because I know you live near the borders and that race is kind of on home turf in a sense.
So the race across Scotland does interest me. So I actually met Caspian at the 13 Valleys. The year he won was the year I came second, and that was like my first ever podium finish. And I just got chatting to him afterwards, and he gave me some advice for the first time I did the spine about sleeping and just trying to be a bit more organised with my sort of packing and stuff. But some of the races that he's done appeal to me, I think more because they're on the longer side. But the race across Scotland does look very interesting to me. I also quite like the idea of having a go at some of the shorter, like 100Ks, because I've only done a few of those. And there's a lot of 100-milers that I haven't done that I'm starting to hear about and see more of. I do quite like the idea of a backyard ultra as well. That's starting to appeal to me a little bit more. I don't know how I would fare at one, but I quite like the idea of the challenge. Something a bit sinister about just doing the same loop on repeat.
Yeah. There's a novel event format that I think someone in America did last year for the first time, which is a vertical backyard ultra, which is every 24. The loop could be, I don't think there's a fixed distance, but it's 1/24th the height of Mount Everest. So every 24 hours you do an Everest. I think that sounds like something that you'd do pretty well at.
Yeah, that sounds like great fun.
It's hard to do it here. I might have to look into that. But yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, what's that? That's going to be near enough 900 meters, I would presume, a lap.
No, it's more like, I think it's like 400 or 500 meters.
Oh, right, okay.
So yeah, you could do it in the legs.
It's 24 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
That would make sense. I'm terrible at maths as well, I apologize.
No, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it would be quite fun, actually. There's a few other ones, you know. I did the Hell of Ellen Sky race, which I really enjoyed. That sort of more short. I mean, that was only 60K, but it was very punchy. It was 60K with 3,700 meters of elevation.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that sort of ridge running, which, again, I'm not the fastest at, but very much enjoy that sort of technicality part of it. And I also think it's amazing seeing the people who are right at the sharp end of the field. You know, I do feel like I am quite good on the technical terrain, but seeing some of them, it's just mind-blowing. It's so impressive. I've not actually got... The only other race I've got planned this year is the 13 Valleys again in September. And that's actually as a media runner, because I'm going to be vlogging it, but I'm going to be doing a bit more in-depth vlogging for them, sort of like doing a bit more about the kit list and the kit check, looking at some recce routes as well. Because I've done that every year that they've run it. I did the 13 Valleys first year, 13 Valleys second year, 7 Valleys with a friend this year until he dropped out. So I sort of spoke to them and I sort of said, I know, you know, I've done the vlogs, would you be interested? And they said yes. So that's the only thing I've got planned so far.
Nice. Well, I'm sure whatever you do end up doing, it'll be interesting to follow. I think your ITRA page is full of very interesting races. I should mention the Snowdon Ultra that you mentioned. You did win that race, so I don't want to mislead listeners that this is your first win. But nevertheless, it feels like quite a iconic win, I guess.
This feels like the first big one.
Yeah. One thing I do want to ask you is I'm doing my first race in the Lake District this year. I'm doing Lakeland 50.
Amazing.
Any advice for a southerner like me to have a good time at that race and not fall apart?
Well, first off, congrats on getting a place.
Thank you.
They're pretty hard to come by.
Yeah.
Good luck as well.
It took a few years, I think, of trying. So.
Yeah, I've been trying now for, well, pretty much the first year I started running was the first year I applied. So I applied twice now and nothing
I
yet.
Think this was number 4, which I think is kind of reasonable. Yeah
fair enough. Where do you normally get out running? Do you normally, what are the trails like?
So I live relatively near to the North Downs Way, which you might not be familiar with, but it's undulating. I mean, by northern terms it's pancake flat, but you've got hills like Box Hill where you can get 200 meters of climbing in 2 or 3 k. So you can do some punchy climbs.
I'd say stuff like, you know, doing some hill reps on something like Box Hill, but working on that technical descending.
Yeah.
I don't know a huge amount of the Lakeland course because I've not done it, but just knowing the terrain in the area, I think you've got a lot of that technical aspect of it. And, you know, the more time you spend on that steeper terrain, the better. So just trying to basically maximize that time on as much hill as you can. And I know everyone is starting to hark on a bit about strength work, but it is massively beneficial, especially when it comes to stuff like injury prevention. You know, you're more likely to get an injury because you're fatigued at the end of a race, because you're not concentrating. You're more likely to roll an ankle because you're not, you know, focused and your muscles have sort of started to fatigue throughout the race. So doing that strength work, even if it's just one session a week, it's going to be massively beneficial. That's what I've noticed a huge amount in my training, is I've started to do a lot more running specific strength stuff, and it really does help. But yeah, I'd say try and get some elevation in to your training, try and get some hill repeats, even if it's just on something like Box Hill. I think I'm sure I've run Box Hill a few times when I lived in London, because you can get it quite easy from a train station. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very popular at the weekend. I didn't realise you'd lived down south. So yeah, you may have been familiar with it. It's also home to the only Category A fell race within the M25, I want to say.
Oh, right.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
That was today.
Yeah, just like anything around there.
It was actually today, that race.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. But yeah, anything around there that's sort of got a bit more elevation. And I'd say the other big thing is, which I always try and do now when I'm training, is when I come to a downhill that's quite runnable, I really try and go for it.
Yeah.
At least once or twice in a run, just to really sort of get that extra stretch in the quads and start really building up that descending strength.
Nice.
But if you can, try and get to up to the lakes or to Wales and do some more technical running.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's going to be my weak link, downhill technical, but I don't think it's the race where I'm going to be trying to be competitive.
I don't think it's going to be the sort of thing that's going to ruin your day by, you know, not having a huge amount of that in your training. But the more you can get, the better. But I wouldn't stress that it needs to be the be all and end all of your training.
Nice. Well, Harry, it's been super cool to catch up, and I'm so stoked for you with this win, and really excited actually to just see where you go next. Because, as I say, I think
thank you very much.
Whether you're at the front or you're just in the mid pack, I think it's the races you pick are going to be really interesting to follow. I've just got one more question, which I ask everyone on this podcast, and that is, what do you think is the most important thing when it comes to success in ultra running?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think that's quite a difficult one, because I think there's so much to choose.
Well, I'm curious to know kind of how you would define success, actually, because you've got this unique relationship with the sport.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I would say, for me, success is enjoying it regardless, whether you have a good race or a bad race, or whether you don't race at all and you just run. But you might, you know, you might run FKTs, you might run for course records. I think having a good support system is massively important. I'm very lucky. I've got my lovely wife, Beanie, who, despite the fact that I often say, can you drive me here? Can you drive me there? Can you support me on this? And I'm sure she doesn't absolutely love doing it, but she does it with a smile on her face regardless every time. And she's overly supportive of me, really. She's always so proud. You know, she actually works in Alston, and when she heard we were coming through, she basically took a 20-minute break from work just to give us a clap as we ran past.
Nice.
So I think a good support system is really good. But I think the most important thing for me with success is to make sure that you're enjoying it, and to not worry if you're not enjoying it. Just have a rest, have a break. You know, maybe if you don't feel like it that day, don't beat yourself up about it. You know, I've had days when I've gone out and I've absolutely had the best day. You know, you see a beautiful sunrise, you've got a weather inversion, it's amazing. And some days you go out and you think, this is going to be amazing, and you just feel rubbish. You know, you don't want to be there. And I think some days it's okay just to not go out, because, you know, unless you're a professional, unless you're getting paid and, you know, you want to be bothering the podium on everything you turn up to, then we're all doing it to turn up and have a bit of a good time, you know, have some enthusiasm, enjoy ourselves, and, you know, really make the most out of the beautiful places we get to explore and run in. And, you know, we should all feel lucky that we've got this amazing landscape, whether it's, you know, the North Downs way like yourself, or whether it's the Lake District or the Pennines or wherever you are. You know, go out and have a good time, have some enthusiasm, you know, that's what it's all about. That's the icing on the cake, for me anyway.
Amen to that. Long may that continue in trail running, that spirit. Harry Firth, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.